This is workshop 3 of the DGHA conference 2014. In this session, we're talking about dog guide equipment, and its speakers are various experienced dog guide users, instructors, giving us an overview of the equipment used with dog guides.
This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
The clips are at the base of the harness, the toilet harness, and you clip one handle of a plastic bag onto that clip before you put it on the dog. We currently are using the dog tidy bags, which are the small plastic bags you find at many of the dog parks where they have dispensers. Many councils are using them. That's the company, the Dog Tidy Company, which is in Victoria. And they market them. You actually can access them over the internet. In Moorabbin. And they are a good size. There are other options. Shopping bags tend to be too big. They tend to hang down and the dogs.
You can tie a knot from the bottom of the bag.
Or the other one I've heard is the nappy bags that you get in the supermarket. They're a good size. You guys know it all. So you've got all the tricks of the trade. Word of mouth works really well. At the top of the harness is, as I say, quick release, quick. And either side of that is a large button, like a jeans button. And those buttons are to hook the other handle of the plastic bag onto. So you hook one handle onto the hooks, you clip it around the dog's waist, then you pass the bag between the dog's legs, and you then put the tail of the dog through the hole of the second handle and then hook it up onto the buttons. The female bag has two clips, and that actually opens the bag out a little bit more. They're just as useful for the male ones, and actually probably I don't know that we'll bother ordering the male ones, because the female ones are more effective because they do open up. The male ones, of course, it's easier to sort of push it to one side, because when the males urinate, they'll always, it doesn't end up in the bag, but for the females, if they urinate beforehand, then most dogs, if it's first thing in the morning, they urinate first and then they defecate after that. The idea is you want to try and catch, usually you want to catch just the two. Otherwise, it can get a bit sloppy. But you can put things into the bag beforehand, like flour. There are absorbing crystals.
Just poke a little hole with your fingernail and the urine comes out and
the
poo stays in it.
That certainly sounds like an idea, but when you pick the bag up, it could be dripping out still.
But ladies and gentlemen, every time you call out, the people that are hard of hearing in the room are not getting what you're saying. So it's making it very difficult. If, you know, just let Harry talk.
Thanks, Erica. So what I'll do is I'll pass these around. I'll actually hang a bag off them so you can get the idea of how they're situated. But maybe we can, someone might offer to demonstrate one to you on their dog later.
Hermione's happy to wear it.
They're calling out again.
If anybody wants to actually, you've never seen them before. The great advantage of something like this is means that you don't have to feel around on your hands and knees.
We've got our extra technology set up.
Or friends have to pick up for you, or your gardener, or something like that. It means this is a perfect situation. when you're out on holiday or something like that, and there might not be grass or anything around, or a place where you can pull up your dog, and so I'm able to contain it, and then you just pop it in the nearest bin. And it complies then with council regulations, because council's very keen for people to always be picking up after their dog. Why not be a good example
I've never used one of these bags. I've had a guide dog.
If Harry could at least repeat the questions.
Boy,
you've never used one before.
I've never used one. I've had eight dogs, and I would like to know whether this dog that I've got now that I've had for 2.5 years, if I put that on, I would use it.
If you really needed to.
Most dogs do accept them quite well. It does take a consistency on your part. And generally the best time to start is always when you know the dog toilets, and which is usually first thing in the morning. When your dog is always going to do a poo, that's when you start the process. Some dogs will sort of freak out a little bit when you first put it on. They go, "Whoa, what are you doing?" And occasionally you'll get a dog that will just won't accept it. They'll hold on forevermore and just won't go until you take it off. But it is persistence. Most dogs we find will accept it. I haven't had one yet that have been really bad. We'll pass one around and the tables, and then we can demonstrate one later. Any more questions?
I've got a question. The one you're giving us to touch is clean, right?
Well,
the poo goes in the bag. Does anyone want to?
Harry, how much are they buying?
$15, I think.
They are awesome.
Where do we buy them from?
From your provider. As far as I know, you can't buy them as individuals. We access them through a company called Boat Pets, and they supply to organisations. I'm not sure the individuals, as I understand, because they don't appear on their website or anything like that. So maybe a marketing, nice backyard business for somebody. Start making dog toilet cards, as you probably sell them in pet shops everywhere.
The guide dogs Queensland up.
They could access them if they wanted to. I'm not sure that they do use them. Cedar users up in Queensland, some are starting to use them now too. They weren't providing them for a while, but now we're getting people up there requesting them, so we're sending them up to our staff up there as well.
Can I make a comment, Harry?
Yes.
Hang on.
You can talk while I'm handing this around.
Yes, hi everyone, Penny from Victoria. I just wanted to sort of share my experiences using them. I've used them for over 14 years now. At first I was told by my guide dog school that I couldn't have one because I had low vision and there were only totally blind people who couldn't pick up. And I was heading overseas and I said, well, I want one because it's going to make toileting much easier over there. And it was, you know, handy to take on the plane because, you know, there wasn't a lot of international travel back then. And so all the airlines were really worried about toileting on the plane and stuff like that. So having one up my sleeve was really handy. The other thing that I found was my dog was a really fussy toileter. She'd, you know, spit a fart around and, you know, take ages to go. And by putting on the toilet harness, it really cemented her toileting patterns. When she got the harness on, she knew it was time to go and she used to. And she's also a walker, so it was great because I used to toilet her on a nature strip, a communal nature strip, so I never had to worry about leaving any pieces behind. So I can't sing their praises highly enough.
Okay.
Yeah, aim at me.
Agreed.
Sorry, just doing a thing.
Okay.
Penny, yeah, I'll just grab the microphone and get a couple of comments.
Paul, just add a couple more comments. I'm a great advocate for the clothing harnesses. One piece that Penny mentioned was that other dogs develop very, very good routine clothing habits with the use of the clothing harness. This is back to the learning period, but it just becomes stimulus response. Put the clothing harness on, and the dog knows exactly time to toilet. Amongst new dog users from school where I work, the uptake would be 80-90% of people would be using that. And Harry, just for your information, a new innovation is day glow colours. Which are helpful for those low vision dog guide users who in the past didn't need them.
Day glow. Hot pink.
And again, if you're looking for a day glow option, just talk to your dog provider.
I'd like a hot pink one, please, Harry.
Yes, in terms of the people who want these harnesses, where maybe some of the schools have not been providing them or don't know about them. The thing that we would say would be to contact the school we drove. And as Harry said, with council regulations now, I'm pretty sure that if, you know, although if you have a dog guide and it, makes the list, you might get off, if a council officer sees you. But the bottom line is, it's still your responsibility to pick up after your dog. And although that is sometimes problematic when you're groping around the grass, with these toilet harnesses, there's not a problem at all. And you just throw the bag out and you run away. The only real problem is finding the bin, but yeah. You can actually teach your dog to find it.
Yep.
So it's all good. So we've got some information about new harnesses that have been developed, and I know both Team Idols Australia and Guide Dogs are looking at new harnesses, so I'm not sure whether Paul would want to start the conversation off about that, or how many of you two can discuss it?
Paul, you know, just make a couple of short comments. At Guide Dogs Victoria, we've been looking at a range of different options. For those of you who have limited experience of seeing different styles of harnesses, my guess is around the world they're 50 or 60 or 70 or more, some of which are just available on the internet, but there are a really, really huge range. I've seen little fold-up harnesses that can be folded down in their entirety into a case, only about twice the size of a sunglass case.
Wow.
Not very robust harness. There's harnesses made of weaving. I've seen someone, a person here with a weaving harness, which is great for people who might be visiting the beach or somewhere where the traditional leather harnesses don't stand up too well.
There is a sort of
harness types and styles out there. Most of the schools have traditionally used one type of harness and generally stuck to it. At Guide Dogs Victoria, we have been looking at a switch design harness, which is an ergonomic design. Or theoretically ergonomically designed to lower back strain. So that's something we've been looking at. One of the issues around that is that particular harness type is poisonously expensive at between $700 and $1,000.
Oh.
Yeah. it's nice. because those sorts of very expensive harness types could possibly be funded under that scheme, but very difficult, of course, for current schools to be investing that kind of money in harnesses. I'll put over to Harry now to see what you've got to say.
There's certainly, as I understand, there was a workshop relating to new harnesses, and there is generally at every federation conference, and there was a recent one in Japan, that there were presentations again in respect of harnesses. We've been shown some designs using carbon fibre handles that run longitudinally, handles that can be changed to going at perpendicular, but then also you can change them around. I think the Japanese have some designs in that respect. It's all about using something that's comfortable for a client. They get the effective message and reading from their doc, and it's cost effective. So certainly our harness is a work in progress. Currently we use handles from Drydock UK. Some other Australian schools are using the same handles, but our harness design is a little bit different. We haven't had much change with that recently, although we did go to a side-trip harness. We never had side-trip harnesses historically, but now we have a side-trip design in the same style. And it has its disadvantages, and they're the sorts of things we need to look at, things like having two clips in our harness design means it's more cumbersome to do up and things like that. But there's other advantages about it, being lightweight and things like that, and the cost of production. It's an ongoing thing. I think we'll continue to look at it as funds are available. We don't require clients to purchase their harness, so something is provided by the organisation, and of course they're within the UAF. Will change if we can produce a more effective harness, more suitable, and the price is a bit higher, well, then maybe we say, well, that's part of something the client has to purchase, and then there's funding accordingly. Look, I think it's everyone to itself. I like all designs, and all have their advantages. We haven't yet seen a perfect design, and there will be a lot of innovation. There's so many new products on the market, a recent one we looked at was because a student was doing an engineering degree in Canberra, and she was doing a thesis on harness design. Oh. And so she brought those designs down to us to have a look and trial, and we gave our opinions, but nothing's actually eventuated out of that. I think she's passed her course as a result, but it was really interesting to see what she produced, and it was funny, she actually used for the actual handle, she sent it to the Netherlands to have it produced with 3D printing. Okay. It was made out of a composite material using 3D printing. You know, it was quite interesting. And then the rest was carbon fibre. Very lightweight. And they have all the sorts of things we need. You get things like some designs have very rigid handles. And then people will say, like, I like to be able to give some form of handle correction, like a little tug on the handle where it sort of has that looseness about it, and that the dog responds to that. And some designs make that difficult. So you've got to think about things like that as well. So it's the feedback from clients. What do you do with your lead? How long should your lead be? And there's all different feelings about that. For a while we had a variety of lengths. So it's a changing thing, the equipment.
whistles and things like that to a different whistle design, but it make it cost effective. Yeah. Yes.
Some individuals will have to purchase their own because they're sort of a dog that already has a harness. If you want to trial new ones, is there any way you can go to trial to see which ones not only suit you but suit the dog?
No.
And there's always the cost of
unless you can access them over the internet, because as Paul said, there are some designs you can buy over the internet. But it would be in consultation with the organisation who's provided the harness. And if they're willing to trial, particularly if the harness is their property, I think you would have to negotiate with them. And if you said, well, can I trial one of the cedar harnesses on my guide dog? Well, then that's something I would have to decide that would be okay. And vice versa. I mean, now we make special harnesses for special cases. You know, I've designed a harness for a special case in Canberra, especially built.
It's forward, you know, just thought I'd share with an interesting harness story. Well, hopefully it's interesting. And it relates to my first foray overseas, which was to Israel, and I arrived in Tel Aviv with my Guide Dog Victoria harness to meet my Israeli counterpart in this brand new school, and he was using a harness very similar to the cedar design, a Guide Dog Victoria UK harness in fact. I took a shine to that, he took a shine by the time I left, he was convinced that the Guide Dog Victoria harness was the best model, and I was quite convinced that the Guide Dog Victoria UK model was the best. I'm not quite sure what he's using today, but over time I've come to realise that there's many, many different harness designs around the world, and there are benefits and disadvantages
Just by way of a comment, I think it relates, I suppose, to the area of access. That one of the things that I alluded to this morning was about the number of dogs we're likely to see increasing over the time. And one of the things that I've noticed in the short time I've been a handler is people actually recognise the dog by the harness and what sort of service dog it is. And I wonder whether those people, proponents of different harnesses and the schools themselves, acknowledge just the power of that as a recognition factor in terms of access. If you're going to live in a world where there are many more service dogs in that space, one of the things that would be useful in terms of that querying of your legitimacy of being having universal access to everywhere, which we do currently enjoy, is the ease with which you can do that. And if you're changing and chopping, having different coloured harnesses and representing, at least at first pass, perhaps not a dog guide, I wonder whether we need to be concerned about that as we embrace new harnesses into the future.
I'd like to corroborate that.
Do you want me to touch the microphone?
Yeah.
Coming your way?
Sorry.
My name is Joyce, I come from Toowoomba, and one of my guide dogs was badly attacked by a companion dog that was owned by a woman with I suppose you'd say an intellectual disability in Toowoomba. And when I reported that dog to the authorities, we were chasing after its origins, we found that it wasn't an officially licensed companion dog at all. It was produced by a backyard operator, but it had companion dog plastered all over it, so that people think that it was a companion dog, and it was just a very bad tepid Alsatian. And that dog was withdrawn from that woman, and she was given another one. But Corey, my guide dog, was attacked twice by that dog, but both on very, very public occasions. And people were very, very shocked by what happened. They could see that Corey was a guide dog. This other dog had companion dog placards all over it. They could see that it very obviously wasn't accredited. And that brought home to me, the problem of identification. It's like a little bit like the debate that broke out when coloured canes came in to replace the white cane. A lot of people didn't know what the coloured canes meant. They thought it was just an accessory, whereas the white cane is obviously what it is, and people get assisted. And I do think that all guide dog harnesses, no matter how diverse they may become, should have the name of the guide dog school on it. For example, if it says CETA, Guide Dogs Australia, or Guide Dogs Queensland, or Guide Dogs Victoria, or whatever, then I think that that should be very, very proudly displayed on the dog's harness so that people know just what it is and where it comes from. So it's my opinion on that one. But I really do think that this accreditation business is very, very important, because otherwise anyone can just shove a dog into a harness that they make themselves and take it in with.
They do.
They do.
I don't know if anybody knows about the new ID card we have, WA, just up ID one. It has my picture on it and my dog piece. And when I went to the counter, they asked for my ID, and I showed them that it has the regulation on the back and my picture on his picture. And that's apparently, like, I'm going November to the US, that's going to be his passport to get in there now. So Guide Dogs WA. Trial recently, it's very fantastic, really. And now when people come up to me questioning, like, is our security guard, are they hanging down there, they're okay. Sorry.
Just with going to the UN, do you need to put your dog in quarantine or anything? Sorry, they won't do that. Just with going to the US, I'm just wondering, did you have to put your dog in quarantine or anything?
I'm coming back at home for 10 days.
And for how long?
10 days.
10 days.
And you're not allowed to have any animals. You can still walk out, but you can be in contact with any animals. And after 10 days, you go to your vet, they clear it, and then you go back to the equine. The other thing I want you to be aware of.
No microphone.
This way, the microphone's coming.
The rabies shot costs $100, but it's the blood test that costs $250, so it's a total of $350. Now, you've got to do this every year. The shot is good for 3 years, but the way the regulations here, you've got to do it every year. So every time you go out, if you do it within the 12 months, the dog's definitely within that 12 months, that's fine, but if you plan on going out every 12 months, it's got to be done each year. It's not just it's a shot and a blood test. That's the way I do it.
Speak up.
I don't know if schools like sort of almost have a branding thing with their harness, and that's maybe why some schools only want to give out one type of harness. But like I found with the current harness that I've been using, it's the same harness because I've been in the same school, two dogs, and with the first dog it was fine because he had a lot of tension and pull on him, so I got a lot of feedback. But I'm finding with this second dog that he's very light tension, and from day one I have really, really, really struggled with the harness that I've got, which is the only one that the school basically offers. And so I've never been truly confident because of that. And what I'm wondering is, like, couldn't schools, I mean, I know it's important to be able to identify, like, that it's a guide dog and whatever, but I think, like, I'm just wondering if schools even look at, like, some other different types of harnesses, even if they painted them the same colours or whatever that their school is. Like whether it's a light brown or a dark brown or whatever colour harness configuration I've got, because I just think that this whole one size fits all approach where, oh, this is our school's harness and this is what everybody gets, and you're kind of going, yeah, but that worked last time, but now it's not working, and I just wonder what extent schools acknowledge that.
That's a good question. And it is about meeting the needs of the individual user, and that's probably something that schools need to look at, about providing options where students could use a better result. And I think that's something that we can take back to our organisations and say, maybe we should be providing a range of things. Naturally, we do get people with preferences, particularly if they've used a type of harness for many years, and then they choose to get a good dog from a different organisation, and which uses a different style of harness. So at first, there is sort of a bit of sort of saying, no, I'm not used to that style. Why can't I have the other style? And then I imagine the answer would be, well, you try ours, and then for a while, and then you see if you've still got the same reasoning. Now, your comment there is saying, well, I did try it, but it doesn't really suit my needs. Is there any other way?
It's the same mask, different dog, yeah.
Well, maybe it's about going back to your instructors or the school and saying, is there any other way that something can be done with the dog or the handle or whatever to produce the tension or whatever that I'm not feeling, which I did previously. Without talking to the organisation, I think.
Bring on the NDIS, I
guess.
Yeah. I think people can be more aware of what is out there and the whole, your needs and your aspirations and goals. People probably think a bit more outside of the ordinary run of things in terms of what I would really like. And so I'm going to open it up to, we've got 15 minutes left, so I'm going to open it up to people who, if anyone's got any equipment or things that they've found that are really useful for their dog. And because I've got, I'm going to hold the microphone first, because I've got it. So I've got, I don't want to pass them around because I think people will be distracted with other people talking, but I'm going to be around at afternoon tea time, so people can find me, I probably will be hanging around here, and come and look at the stuff I've got. Firstly, I found a coat. I don't know how many people with their organisation get a coat, and the thing that I've found with the one that we get for our dogs is that it doesn't protect under their tummies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you're walking along and it's wet, your dog is saturated. Mm-hmm. So I went to a pet shop and I found a coat by Wagwear.
Yep.
And it actually covers, you put their two front legs into, there's two holes in the front, and you put their two front legs in, and then you kind of fold it around their belly, and it pretty much covers from head to tail, and it covers the underbelly too, and then you zip it up the side. And it's very, very awesome. And Howard hates it, and he will slow down when he's wearing it. And just does not like it. But let me tell you, as a person who needs to go in and out of offices and things, I just hate the fact that, if it's really raining, my dog is just putrid underneath. And I'm always with a towel or whatever, so it's a very cool thing. The other thing I have is a Zoom group. Oval shaped brush, and it's got little props from fingers, and you use it to remove hair from your dog. But why are you removing hair from your dog? Your dog is a nice little wizard. And dogs will all over on their backs. I don't know how it does, but he's quite happy to be brushed all over with his. And my older dog, my first dog that I had a thin coat, not a thin amount of hair, but his coat was short, and I didn't find that I picked up a lot of hair with the power, and he has a longer coarser coat, and I can get
single device.
It's very, very, very handy. The third thing I've got is a rake, which is kind of like a Terminator, but it's more lethal, I think. It's got
So quite, it's got two different links that are pronged. And again, I'm happy for people to come and have a look at it. And you basically run it along the backwards along the dog, like from front to back, and you remove hair. The thing is with these, you shouldn't use them too often, and you really need to be aware, because I've been stabbed by these poles. Like, they actually do hurt if you get, you know, if you press down too hard, apply too much force. But again, the amount of hair that you get off a doll is absolutely amazing. And whilst we also have the double-sided brushes that we use, you know, with the metal teeth and the bristles, I find that whilst they can pick up some hair, these other two items are just awesome in terms of the amount that you don't realise that you can actually get on the dog. Two more bits. I've got a nylon bone, which looks like a... I don't think I want to explain what it looks like. A flat bone with little ends, and it's got nodules on it. I think this is called a Duratrude, and you can get, if you buy a raffle ticket tonight, you can get one that's similar but bigger. And these are, the dogs just absolutely love them. My tell if I'm working him really hard, he'll come back to his desk and he'll dive under his desk, and all you'll hear is this crunch, 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 crunch. Obviously he needs dressing or something, and he just massacres his nylon bone, and he's had it for a year and it's still quite okay. The only thing I would say is that really be aware of how much your dog is chewing it, because sometimes there have been dogs who have actually made their gums bleed because they get so into the bone that they bleed. And also, once the bone starts to wear humongously, you really do need to replace them. They can swallow, the way that it disintegrates kind of is that it disintegrates in really, really small pieces, and so it doesn't actually hurt the dog. Shouldn't actually hurt the dog, and you can feel when they're chewed it because the ends kind of come bristly, I guess you would call it. And but once, you know, once the bone actually starts to disintegrate, just chuck it out and buy a new one. And they're just very, very good for you know, dogs who want to chew, dogs who aren't very good with plush toys. You know, they might kill them. You know, dogs that like con toys, and then, you know, they like to sit in their con. So it's just another option. And the last thing I have is a 3M, it's called Lint Roller. And you can buy them at the supermarket, and they come with, I think, 50-60 sheets, and you just put one in the bucket, and you can remove dog hair from almost anything. And yeah, yes. You could use it on the dog.
You can.
Most likely. And the best part about these ones are is that the actual sheets are made of, they're not paper. So when you actually rip them off, they don't you don't actually end up with like 10 sheets coming off at once kind of thing. They rip off a little bit easier. They're made of thin plastic. So they're my bits of equipment. I'm happy to show people at afternoon tea. And if anyone has any questions, or if anyone's got any tips and tricks or equipment that they want to talk about.
Could you just quickly rattle up the item and what cost?
Oh, okay. The lint roller, maybe $10-$11 from the supermarket, but check online. I always go shopping online because often you'll find them cheaper.
Yeah.
The rake, I don't know. I know a Furminator can cost you, which is sort of similar, can cost you anything from the cheaper, you know, and there are brands, there are different brands, but particular Furminators are quite expensive and can go up to, I think the first time I bought was like $80. An absolute rip-off because you get them cheaper.
Yeah, you can get those from eBay.
Yeah, eBay. You know, again, is another thought. The nylophone? Oh, okay. The rake that I got, this is actually a piece of equipment given me to speed up. It's a bamboo brand rake, and they're under $20. The Zoom Room. This is also a cedar.
Yeah, $15, $20.
Okay, $20 again.
If you don't do shopping on the internet, you're really, but if you're confident about using a Mek online, if you're really interested in finding cheaper products, just check online. And if you're really smart, with the Nylabone that I'm just going to talk about, you can get them from overseas from Amazon, and they're like a quarter of the price. They are so cheap, it's not funny.
But what about shipping costs?
No, they're still often the shipping costs. You might get free shipping, or depending on how many you buy, you get like really reduced shipping. It doesn't, I think in my experience, it's almost still cheaper to buy from overseas than it is to buy here.
So, what shipping do you select by on? Do you just go with the standard shipping, or do you use Better Priority, Global, whatever it's called?
I usually just go standard shipping, because I'm not a very confident Amazon user, but I don't find the site very accessible, so I just go with the easiest thing.
Oh, we can use the app, and the app can
take it. Oh, okay, I don't know about the app, sorry, I just use the internet.
Excuse me, Nadia, I've just got a question regarding Nylabones.
Could people use the microphone, please?
I was going to say, I'm happy to repeat the question.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. Yeah, that's from Leah.
You have a question about the Nylabone.
Just see, how do you get your dog interested when it's smooth and not very exciting because it just looks like plastic bone?
Okay, so the question is, how do you get your dog interested in Nylabone when it's some of them are quite smooth? This one I've got here has actual modules on it. So therefore, you've got that interest in the first place, and like I said, when you come around, if you want to come and have a look at it, it'll be obvious what I'm talking about. But the thing that I do is I pick it up in one hand and I'll kind of pull it at it, and I kind of shove it into the side of his mouth, and I kind of turn it just a little bit, and then he'll go, that's cool. And it's like a toy, and then I'll take it away, and then I'll come up with that, and then he'll say, and then, you know, he'll take it. And now I don't even have to do that. He will just go to his bed and you'll hear him gnawing away on his Nylabone. If he's not, sometimes I kind of, repeat the process, but usually now he knows what they're all about. The other thing is often they come infused with some flavour. Like, I think this one is bacon infused, so if you've got lots of bacon, it'll come between me. Now, the Nylabone, the Durabone that this is, was, I think, about $29. The other thing you need to know is be aware of the size that you buy. It needs to be for bigger dogs mostly. I suspect most of our dogs would be over 23 kilos. Some may be not, but most of them would be. Don't buy the smaller ones because that's when you come across some problems with the dogs and you're missing them and they're too small and they'll destroy them in no time at all. And then you wonder, well, what the hell am I spending $29, on an island going for, or 39 or even 40, some of them are quite expensive.
The Wagway coat is about $59.
okay, 60. Again, just do a little bit of homework in terms of, where you buy it. Sometimes they're cheaper than in winter they're going to be more expensive. Try buying something like that in summer if you want. That's it.
I've got some stuff to share.
Okay, can I pass over to my colleagues? Nobody has any other questions?
I've got some questions I'd like to ask.
Yeah. Christian
here. I've got a problem with Quinny. She's very, very bad at sniffing and trying to pick things up off the pavement. I got Quinny from Guide Dogs Queensland, and they've given me, the first one thing they gave me was a canny collar, and she just kept reaching up with her paw and slipping the muzzle off.
Yeah.
And so they gave me something else, I've forgotten the name of it now.
Gentle leader?
A gentle leader,
Halsey?
Or a halter? I don't know what it is, but it's made of material and it's tighter on her, she can't get it off. And that works very effectively, and I quite fact find now if I don't have that collar on, she won't work. As a guide dog, I've tried to go back to check chain and leave the collar, and she just is all over the place. But whenever she gets any opportunity, I mean, she's chewed away through about three or four of them now, and it costs about $30 or $40 each when she gets hold of them. And Jason, that I spoke to in Brisbane, told me that they're a metal. Muscles, but the guide dogs Queensland won't use them.
Mm.
But I'd like to know whether anyone knows anything about a Mickle metal muzzle. And the second question I'd like to ask is about dental chews. I had to pay $350 to get Quinny's teeth cleaned this year under general anesthetic because she's allergic to meat. She gives anything meat product gives to the top, so I've got it on the most expensive Mucinibra. But that's all she gets. But there's nothing to clean her teeth. And I had to pay $350 to get her teeth cleaned. Someone said that there were dental sticks that could be bought at the vet and they had to be given every day or something. And I'd like to know what people, any information people have about those. So that's my big question. Whether there's a metal muscle, then what can I give Quinny to clean her teeth?
It's Nicole. I bought just a couple things with me. Going back up to Queensland, I've been using this deer antler chew, mm-hmm. instead of larvae. So I've actually bought a couple with me, different shapes. And these, I think, are good because dogs' gums don't actually bleed on these ones. And also, if you stand on them, it's far less painful, I reckon, than if you have larvae. So that's points to them, I reckon. I've bought a couple. And also, I bought a thing called a licky stick. I don't know if anyone's heard of that, but instead of handing a puppy a piece of dry kibble or anything like for a treat, it's like sort of shaped like a human deodorant, so you've got to be careful. Like, please, if you're going to get one, sniff it before you roll it. But the good thing about it is you uncap it, you give it to the dog, the dog takes a couple licks, two or three licks, and then you recap it and put it away again. And they're all different flavours you can get, beef and liver and chicken. And I think you're good for about 100 licks, and 10 licks of it is worth like 1 calorie, so you're not exactly stacking your weight on puppy. They're about $10 to buy, and really good for snatchy dogs, because like I sent some to my friend, because her dog was always snatching at her fingers. She tried to remind puppy gentle, but puppy wasn't being very gentle, so I literally bought her some. And
so
it's up to us.
Uh-oh, here we go. There's someone dreaming. Now there's someone's dreaming there.
Okay, short answer. Short
answer
is
can I rip pull from this iPad? Yeah, so I've got
it from the laptop.
So anyway, I'll
buy these and I'll bring it to you. I'm going to should have read that before.
Do you still have questions, Destiny?
Oh, yeah, not a suggestion, just something I use, you know. Now, for those that take the dogs out in the summer and what have you, I would actually call up to get the baby socks and put them on the dog's feet so that it keeps their feet, a bit cooler. And I've been using them and it works quite well. Just go and get the large baby socks and put them on the dog.
Thank you. My question relates to Stephanie. That's better. Dealing with what's in the feet, I was wondering if anyone's tried cooling coats, getting boots, and what sort of boots they use. I got some from the Cedar, which were quite good, except they're really hard to put on. As they slide sideways every so often, and then watch his feet are exposed to feet. So I thought roughly, and watch her is a pain who won't wear them. He keeps them. So that's my question, dealing with the feet.
Thank you.
Is
that reinforcement that you were talking about?
Yeah, just to comment on about the boots there. Yeah, Cedar do have a boot there. They're not bad, they're not great either. And again, it's about cost. We're seriously looking at rough boots from America. They're more expensive. They are a lot more expensive, but there is an outlet now in Australia. You can get them a bit cheaper.
I bought them off of Harry.
Yeah.
They're the ones that watch the hates, and I've given him clues for a board.
Well, I didn't like it.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go up to Ross Downs quite a lot, so it's very hot up there. Yep. And I've got a pair of boots which I got from America that have got a, like a sneaker sole, but the rest of it is made of mesh. Uh-huh. And then it just wraps around their leg with a bit of Velcro. Uh-huh. He does a bit of the prancing to start with, yep. But after about 50 metres, he settles down and walks properly. But also my dog does not like to walk on shiny, slippery surfaces, like shopping centres, etc. Yeah, yeah. And Banggood on the internet, the dog socks, $2.50 a pair and free postage. And I get about 4 pair at a time because like most kids do in the sock. They come in with 4 socks, but I only use 2 on this front page. That's a really good resource. They've got lots of different dog stuff. But they've got the non-kids. Stuff on the bottom as well. Banggood, B-A-N-G-G-O-O-Z, all one word. They're being passed around 8 pair of them at the moment. But also in Victoria, there's one of the clients has developed a backpack for the harness. And my dog now carries his own doggy bag, his own treats and water bowl, etc. And the harness is a little bag from Smiggles, you know, the place. And it's been adapted where the heart little bag straps have been cut and put clips on them, and it clips onto your actual harness. So you pass that around if you want.
Yeah.
As well. It's attached to the harness, so I would like that. Well, there's one of the girls in Victoria who's a guide dog user. She developed it. I can't remember her name.
Catherine Beaton.
Thank you, Catherine
Beaton.
Beaton. So, I mean, if you contact Guide Dogs Victoria, I'm sure they'll put you on to the right person.
We've got one as a raffle prize tonight. This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?